Chapter 19. Owen. Talon thrusts out his quarterstaff, attempting to strike me square in the stomach. Dodging to the side, I quickly bring up my own staff and try to hit him on the shoulder. He manages to block my attack. The sound of hardened lengths of wood smacking together resounds in the sparring circle, reverberating off the cavernous walls around us. Panting, the two of us break away from one another, backing up to the edge of the circle and eyeing each other warily. "You've gotten better," I remark, watching as Talon twirls the staff around in a showy display.
"I've been practicing," he replies offhandedly, shrugging as he rests the staff against his shoulder. "Experience has taught me that there isn't always going to be short swords lying around, and if I'm going to be spending time with you, I'd better be ready to fight with anything."
I grin at him, feeling alive for the first time in weeks. Something about sparring, the struggle between two skilled opponents, makes me forget about my own personal troubles. The sensation of the wood grain on my fingers, the soreness of my muscles, and the sweat trickling down my face fills me with satisfaction, helping me to remember why I became a ranger in the first place. Taking a deep breath, I stride to the center of the ring, adopting a defensive stance with the staff out in front of me. Several Nightingale soldiers watch as we square off once again, their snickering voices carrying across the pit. I pay them little heed. My entire focus is on the fight at hand. Talon approaches warily, his stance also defensive as he closes the gap between us in a few measured steps. For a moment, time seems to stand still, as if the world around us has frozen over. Then, movement. Talon launches forward in a flurry of attacks, striking first with the butt of his quarterstaff, then with the forward haft. I block both times, absorbing the shock of the blows as I fall back, surprised by the ferocity of his push. Crack, crack, crack. The blows continue to come, both of our wooden staves moving back and forth in a blur of motion. Backing up to the edge of the ring, I pivot and use my momentum to dive into a counterattack, striking at his neck and then his chest in short successive strikes. He manages to block those as well, weaving deftly as I push him back toward the center of the ring. Light, he really has gotten good, I think, as I search for an opening. Is this what he was up to all those times he was alone? Practicing with the staff? While these are unconventional weapons by ranger standards, the quarterstaff can easily translate into skill with the spear, which is a common weapon in the king's military. The edicts surrounding the ranger's oath dictate that rangers should be well versed in all manner of martial weaponry, and it seems that Talon has taken this admonition to heart, driving himself to learn how to fight beyond his short swords. He lunges at me in a stabbing motion, the top of his staff making for my heart, and I barely manage to get out of the way before he can score a hit. Talon growls, falling back and adopting a defensive posture once again, with his staff held out in front of him horizontally. Not wanting to give him a chance to recuperate, I launch into another attack, swinging my weapon in a wide arc and trying to sweep out his legs from under him. He uses the lower portion of his staff to block, then brings the top haft down like a hammer blow. The wooden haft connects with the side of my head, sending searing pain into my skull as my vision bursts with light. The next thing I know, I'm lying flat on my back in the sand, blinking furiously as I try to clear my vision of floating stars. Laughter fills my ears, the nightingales jeering loudly at my collapse.
11 hells! Talon curses, dropping his staff and dropping to his knees beside me. Owen, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit you that hard. Are you all right?
Struggling to sit up, I bring a hand to my cheek and wince. The skin is painful to the touch, and judging by the throbbing pain, it's probably going to leave a nasty bruise. Head still ringing, I turn to look at him, his face lined with concern. Then I grin.
Light, Talon. I never thought I'd see the day when you actually bested me in sparring.
His brow furrows slightly, but after a moment he smiles ruefully.
Well, I couldn't let you go on forever undefeated. Not good for my ego.
He stands up and offers me a hand, which I take gratefully, pulling myself up to my feet. The nightingales have stopped laughing and now seem confused that I'm taking the blow so well.
I think that's enough sparring for the day, Talon mutters, picking up my staff and handing it to me. I know I'm going to be feeling this tomorrow, although probably not as badly as you.
I grimace,
trying to ignore the pain in my cheek. "You just want to end the day while you're on top," I complain, though I follow him out of the sparring circle all the same. "Just wait. The next time we spar, I won't go so easy on you." He chuckles as he places his staff on the rack, and I quickly follow suit. There are a wide variety of weapons lining the wall, but we were expressly forbidden from touching any of them. When we'd asked the Nightingales for weapons to spar with, the quarterstaffs were all they'd been willing to give us. Even so, they provided us with a much-needed opportunity to work some of our anxiety out.
"Come on," Talon says, putting an arm around my shoulders as we stride out of the practice area. "Let's head back to the house. There's a mug of ale with your name on it that'll make that ugly face of yours feel much better."
We make our way back to our prison house, walking from the training grounds and into Dunmar City proper. The constant gloom of the sunless cavern brings back some of the depression I'd been feeling earlier, but fortunately, the energy from the fight still pulses through my veins, banishing most of the darkness for the time being. When we arrive, we separate from our guards and sit at one of the tables in the main common area. A few well-placed coins from Rollo's and the King's soldiers had brought a barrel of ale to us, and Talon fills a couple of mugs before settling down, laughing and joking in his usual way and helping me to relax. Normally I would prefer spiced wine like the kind Mrs. Ellis made in Forest Hill, but right now, after an extended morning of exercise, wrestling, and sparring, the bitter liquid feels good on my tongue, giving me a tingling sensation that grows the more that I drink. For a time, we sit amiably and chat, recalling the days before we joined with the Rangers and regaling one another with tales of our childhood. The pleasant conversation is almost enough to make me forget about our dire situation and the way the Nightingale soldiers regard us like invaders as they whisper quietly to themselves. After what seems like an hour of idling and drinking, Zara walks in, trailed by a nervous-looking Nightingale guard. She proceeds to approach our table, a thick book tucked beneath her arm, and a broad smile splitting her face. As she takes a seat near me, she looks at the angry red mark on my face and arches an eyebrow.
"Please tell me you stumbled into a wall," she says dryly, setting the book in front of her and resting her hands primly on the table.
I give her a wan smile.
"Sparring practice," I say, reaching for my mug and taking another long drink.
Zara looks over at Talon, her eyes widening in surprise.
"You did this to him?"
Talon raises both his hands in front of him as if in surrender.
"It was an accident," he replies defensively. "I didn't mean to mess up his face. Light knows how much you like looking at it."
She ignores the jibe and turns her attention back to me, her expression softening.
"Are you all right? That looks painful."
I lean back and give her a nonchalant shrug.
"I'm fine. Just stings a bit. By tomorrow you won't even know that it's there."
Zara doesn't look convinced. Clearing my throat, I attempt to change the subject, pointing at the book in front of her.
"What's that you got there?"
She glances down and rests a hand on the leather-bound cover.
"It's a gift," she replies, excitement creeping into her voice. "A one-of-a-kind spellbook called Legends of the Arcane."
"Sounds mystical," Talon says, tipping back his head and draining the last of his ale.
"Spellbooks typically are, by nature," she replies dryly.
She strokes the cover fondly, as if she is holding something extremely precious to her.
"Where did you get it?" I ask.
She looks back at me, her wide smile returning.
"I've made a discovery," she replies, "one that will come as a great surprise to my colleagues at the Conclave. There are mages in this city, allied with the Nightingales. They call themselves the Cabal. I met with them, and they allowed me to take this book as a parting gift."
Talon leans forward, suddenly intrigued.
"Mages, you say? How many?"
"So they have their own version of the Conclave?" I asked, cutting him off. She beams, looking at each of us in turn.
"Yes, but there are only three of them, and they're very old. They came here many years ago seeking asylum, and have been allowed to live with the Nightingales on the condition that they would use their powers to help their society."
That's... well, that's good, right? Talon looks perplexed by the revelation, as if unsure whether the presence of Nightingale mages is a positive thing.
It's extraordinary news, Zara replies emphatically. It means that they have independent research that they can share with the greater magical community, not to mention the aid they can lend in defending Tarsinium against the R'hllar. Like, the fact that they were even willing to treat with me is a miracle, considering they left the Conclave of their own accord.
I lean back, contemplating this information. If the Nightingales have mages, what else could they be hiding? This city is much more complicated than I expected.
I wonder if we should let the others know, Zara says offhandedly, looking back down at the book.
I don't trust the likes of R'hllos, but the presence of magic in the ranks of the Nightingales will be a tremendous asset for the entire kingdom, assuming they become our allies.
Talon frowns, glancing around the common area curiously.
Where is R'hllos, anyway? I haven't seen him since last night.
Zara looks about as well, eyebrows knitting together as she, too, notices the vacancy of the common room. Aside from a handful of King Aethelgar's soldiers quietly dicing in the corner and their Nightingale minders, the room is fairly empty, with the black-haired knight nowhere to be found.
Maybe he's carousing the city, I offer, though part of me seriously doubts that. The man has a contempt for the Nightingales that rivals even my own.
Perhaps, Zara replies skeptically, turning her attention back to her book and flipping through its pages.
The guards bring us food from the outside, flatbreads and thin slices of pork. We eat as we talk, the conversation shifting to the protector and how long it will take him to come to a decision. I only listen with half an ear as the other two argue, my mind still focusing on the arrogant knight's absence.
He has been acting strangely, I muse, thinking back on R'hllos's behavior. He insisted on coming to our initial meeting with Xander Thel, then merely stood there, not adding anything to the conversation when we were in front of him. Why did he want to be inside of the castle so badly?
Zara laughs at something, but I don't know why. Judging by Talon's reddening cheeks, I'd say she's having fun at his expense.
Maybe I should tell them about what I overheard last night, I think, forcing myself to finish my meal. He's definitely up to something, and knowing him, it probably isn't good. I let the thought go and tell myself that I'll bring it up if it becomes important. No sense in worrying over something that could turn out to be nothing.
Time passes, and when I finish my food, I excuse myself from the group, pushing my chair back and muttering that I want to lie down and rest. Zara eyes me with concern, but Talon just shrugs, turning to ask the guards if he can have a second plate. I give her a reassuring smile and head upstairs, my mind feeling cloudy from all the ale. Walking down the hall, I notice that the door to R'hllos's bedroom stands ajar, but no light peeks through the crack and no sound comes from within. Looking around and finding myself alone, I silently creep up to the door and gently push it open, peeking inside. The bedroom is empty, save for a pair of ruffled-looking bedrolls and a chamber pot sitting in the corner. Glancing over my shoulder again, I step inside and investigate closer, looking for any signs of where the knight might have gone.
Something about him is off, I think to myself, not for the first time, as I crouch down and pick up a crumpled piece of paper. The ink is smudged, and it is written in a script I don't understand. Could it be a code of some kind?
Something catches my attention on the far side of the room. It looks like a bundle of something stuffed under one of the bedrolls. Pulling it out, I find that it's an old blanket filled with broken shards of glass. I immediately look to the room's only window and find that the glass is missing, and when I prod the iron bars, I find that they're loose.
He must have escaped, I realize, the hairs on the back of my neck rising. 11 hells! Was he planning this the whole time? Where did he go? He couldn't have gotten far. The main doors stay heavily guarded, and we are far from the king's territory.
Without a second thought, I push aside the loose iron bars and crawl through the open window. Stepping cautiously on the edging of the wall, I lower myself to the ground of the alleyway 2 stories below. The alley is narrow and cluttered with refuse, but even in the dim light of the cavern city I can see footprints in the grime that lead around a corner. Cautiously I follow them, making sure to look for signs of an ambush. Light, I wish I had my hatchet with me. The mouth of the alley opens up onto a wide boulevard with old, empty crates stacked up against the clay brick walls. Ahead, people bustle about as normal, walking this way and that and paying little heed to their surroundings. Turning, I notice something hidden in the shadows of the crates, and I bend down to investigate, squinting to see in the dark. A figure sits slumped against the wall, half buried in garbage, its head hanging forward on its bare chest, and a dark stain marking its skin. I hesitantly reach forward and push the head up, realizing with horror that it's one of the Nightingale guards. His mouth hangs open in a silent scream, and his throat is slit wide from ear to ear. Judging by the smell and the dry, crusty blood, he's already been dead for several hours. The corpse rests naked on the filthy stones, the armor and uniform stolen, and the weapons missing as well. "Light almighty," I murmur, recoiling from the body and stumbling into the street. People around me start to notice me and whisper as I run a hand through my hair, my thoughts racing. That man was probably guarding the alleyway, I think, piecing together the puzzle in my mind. Rollo's must have murdered him and stolen his clothes so that he could escape. It was a risky plan, but it had apparently worked. I need to get back to Zara and Talon, I think to myself, turning to head back into the safe house. I need to warn them that Rollo's... Three Nightingale soldiers approach me, their swords drawn and their expressions dark. "Well, well, well," one of them says, leveling his blade at my throat. "Looks like the Protector was right to have us guard this lot. You never can trust a kingsman." The other two soldiers mutter their agreement, and I curse bitterly, raising both of my hands in surrender.